Welcome to the Wizard's Edge. This is Marty Stacey, Audio Information Director, with the wizard himself, Jay Abraham. Jay, people have called you a marketing genius, a wizard in marketing. You have been written up in USA Today, many other journals. What does it mean that you're a wizard?
Well, I think, Marty, that the reference is the fact that I've become very, very capable of identifying overlooked ways people can pull massive amounts of improved sales, windfall profits, and really increased success areas out of existing businesses and operations. And to most untrained eyes, to most people who've got no skill at it, it looks almost mystical and mysterious and almost like prestidigitation. I think that's why the name sort of stuck with me years ago. I had a history when I started out of taking companies from little companies to massive companies in 18 months and 12 months, 9 months and 2 years. And I had so many overnight, if you will, successes that it was almost miraculous, and the name stuck, and it's been with me ever since.
Okay, profile some of those successes for us just a little bit to put a bottom line to all of this.
Okay, well, as you may or may not know, Marty, I've been involved in 400 different industries over my life, so I have a pretty extensive understanding and involvement in the past. A couple of the more interesting, what I'll call instantaneous type successes, were we took a company one time from $20,000 in sales to $13 million in sales in about 18 months. We took a company from $300,000 in sales in the investment field to $2 billion in 3 years. We took a magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine, from about $800,000 in sales to $7 million in 9 months. I took a company in the insurance field from $12 million to $40 million in about 18 months. I've got hundreds of million-dollar windfalls. But things like that that are pretty remarkable and pretty rapid and pretty unprecedented, and by most conventional thinkers who think you have to grow your enterprise or make money or build profits one little incremental step at a time, it's very unprecedented and very unusual to comprehend.
And you believe you have ideas that you can pass along to the listeners that will actually benefit them in similar scale?
Well, I have two things, Marty. I definitely have ideas, but I have a keener understanding. I've dedicated the last 25 years of my life, 18 hours some days, 5, 6, sometimes 7 days a week, to analyzing, understanding, mastering a very, very deep and broad comprehension of how money is made, how sales are generated, how people get influenced, why people buy, how and why profit creation is possible. And I understand the meaning of business life, I think, at a dimension and a breadth and a critical level that most business owners and entrepreneurs really don't, because they start out being technicians, and I understand it from so many more focal thrusts. Yeah, I'm lucky. We've had 10,000 people we've been able to impact all over the world, and it's amassed about $3 billion in increased sales and profits. And the techniques and the philosophies, although very unusual and seemingly unique to me, are universally applicable. Almost everybody who embraces them and acts upon them produces substantial, almost incredible sometimes, successes from them.
So the edge is your insight into the real dynamics of what's happening?
I think it's both my understanding and my ability to simplify it and reconvey it or re-explain it in elegant simplicity, making it so painfully obvious why certain people are so much more successful. Not that they're so brilliant, but that they have discovered either consciously or unconsciously, knowingly or accidentally, certain irrefutable success principles, power principles, if you will, that most people never understand or are introduced to. And me introducing them, explaining them, illustrating, and then demonstrating how easily applications of those concepts can be utilized in anybody's situation, business, startup business, life, job.
All right, where should we start? Because I think people really want to see what can happen here. How about turning to page 6, 7, and 8 of the letter that folks received? Would you be willing to talk about some of the promises you made there, some of the asterisk items?
Yeah, no, I think it'd be a good start. It's, as you know, the reason we did this is pretty interesting. I've got a very successful advisory practice, but basically it's $3,000 an hour to engage me, and a lot of people either think that's audacious or can't justify it. I have a lot of programming I do for people, and people pay me $5,000, $20,000, $25,000 for live attendance at my training programs, but there's so many ideas and concepts that I have cultivated, that I have refined, that I have discovered that would work for so many people that our goal is to try to find a vehicle and a mechanism that can cost effectively make that knowledge accessible. What was in that letter was designed to excite, to attract, to motivate, titillate a bit perhaps people, and I think it's appropriate to go and explain in very quick order some of the actual ideas, strategies, and dynamics behind them so people can see instantly how to apply some of the things in their own life.
Okay, how about the most sales and repeat sales?
Where are you, Marty?
I'm on page six.
Sure. It's very important. I got to start with a philosophy that everyone should really embrace if they're going to become devout followers of this philosophy and subscribers to the Wizard's Edge, and that is that you owe it to yourself to live your life or your business with a philosophy of what I'll call optimization. And optimization is a philosophy that says, why do anything halfway? Why allow yourself less than the fullest reward, productivity, result, response, profitability from every effort you take, every hour you expend, every person you come in contact with, every customer or prospect you communicate with, every piece of capital you deploy, every piece of human capital you deploy. So under that assumption, you don't do anything unless everything you do gives you the most sales, the most repeat sales, the lowest cost per lead, the least amount of customer problems, the highest level of customer loyalty and admiration, and the least downside risk. The goal that we're going to be striving for with everything we share this month and every month following is the highest return, the highest current and future residual profit from the lowest effort and risk quotient. And in fact, many of the things we'll talk about will be geared towards helping people get the most they can out of actions and assets they've already expended time, effort, and money on. It would probably be really interesting, if I may suggest, if we go over to some of the examples that we alluded to on page 7 and 8 to start with. And I think if I go through maybe a litany of those and help the listener understand in real summarized manner and condense it really tight and give them an elegant explanation of 15 or 20 different strategies we use to actually make people hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars more in very short order from their enterprise, it might get people excited.
Well, when I see, for example, your publishing concept explained in 10 minutes helped someone make $5 million, that sounds a little unbelievable, quite honestly.
The whole essence of what I want to talk about on this service are elegant solutions, things that are so simple, so direct, so basic, so easy and obvious once they're explained that everybody who's compelled to take action has the capacity to apply some derivative of this in their own situation. I'll go back and give you a 2-minute little short course overview of what happened. I used to be very heavily involved in the financial newsletter business. Back in the 1980s, many newsletters got very complacent. They were selling for $200 a year subscription. They were all touting the same rhetoric. This man called the top and the bottom and gold and got people in and out of the stock market and in and out of bonds and in and out of hard assets. And this man can probably help you too. But they all sounded alike. There was no distinction and there was no real benefit in any of the newsletters. And I got tired of that situation existing and decided that we needed a mechanism to give really qualitative and valuable newsletter authors and editors, people who were really, really astute financial, investment, and economics experts, a really broad audience to the marketplace. And so I came up with a concept that I called the marketing test. And the marketing test was the absolute antithesis. It flew directly opposite of the status quo. Everyone else was selling newsletters for $200. They were saying, subscribe to us, we did this, we did that, invest your money in us, if it makes out for you, great, if it doesn't and you're not satisfied, we'll give you your money back. But implicit to that was the sad implication that if you ask for your money back, you probably lost your bottom on all the money you dropped on the investments that didn't pay out. I came up with a different concept. I identified a number of newsletters, but the one that I'm thinking of, I won't give his name, but one newsletter who had incredible editorial. The man was an absolute brilliant, brilliant expert at financial, investment, economic analysis, interpretation, and recommendations. Almost everyone who subscribed to his newsletter made money and preserved their capital and were safety protected. They made astute decisions. They didn't dissipate their capital. They weren't promiscuous. He was an incredibly astute advisor. Only he was a terrible promoter. He couldn't promote his way out of a paper bag. He had all of about 1,000 subscribers, and the renewal rate was massive. I came up with a marketing test approach, and the marketing test approach has universal application to all kinds of situations that have high renewal or high repeat sales capacity. What the marketing test concept is a simple process that very, very basically identifies a product, in this case the newsletter, that sold originally for $195. We offered people the chance to subscribe for 1 year for only $19, and we had another version at $29. And we had a headline that said, "Are we crazy offering you a $195 newsletter for only $19 or $29? We had two different versions. And it said, "Read below the reason we're doing it and decide for yourself." We had a one-page ad that we ran. The ad basically told the story of how everybody in the nation was selling newsletters for $195. None of them really had a great track record. Everyone was claiming to have been the most prescient person in captivity. If you were an investor and you didn't know better, you could commit $200, and that was the least of your risk because you'd have to commit a lot of your capital unfounded, and you could lose a lot of money, get very, very disenchanted, be very embittered, and then work hard to get your money back. We took a different tack. Our position was simple. We knew we had a quality product. We knew our investment advice and economic recommendations would make and save you money. We ask you to just give us a chance and let us send you the recommendations every month for a year. And we ask people not to invest real money but to paper trade so they never were at risk. And we said at the end of a year after paper trading, if your paper account isn't up massively, if your downside wasn't lowered tremendously, we would not consider even keeping your $19. So we told them all we're asking is enough as a nominal amount of money, $19 or $29. We had two different versions. And we said all we want is enough money to justify the cost of printing the newsletter and getting it to you, not any great amount of money on profit. We are content to make our profit only if our investment advice pays off and you renew in the end of the year. If we do make a great showing for you, you shouldn't mind renewing at any price because you'll be paying for it out of a fraction of the paper profits that we made you last year and that you know will make you in the years to come. And so basically what it was a simple device that lowered the barrier of entry, did not allow people to waste money, gave them a rationale and an explanation for why we were willing to sell something very expensive, very nominally, gave them a positioning and programmed them ethically to be prepared to renew at the end of the year, took away all the risk because we didn't want them to risk any of their real investment capital, showed them why we wanted to sit on the same side of the desk as they did, and we got something like 700,000 people that responded to that offer for a couple different newsletters, and one newsletter publisher on the first tier of renewal made $5 million, another one made $3 million, and another one made, I think, $3.5 or $4 million. It was a very powerful concept, but that concept can be applied to all kinds of situations. It can be applied to health clubs. It can be applied to software. It can be applied to any high perceived value, low cost to fulfill product or service that has inherent in it, Marty, a lot of renewal capabilities or repurchase capabilities. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Walk us through something like maybe a small software company. How could they apply this?
Okay, let's say that you've got a number of pieces of software, and let's say that you know two things. Number one, the software, your basic software is very good, but your more sophisticated one is much better. And let's say you also know that every 6 months or every year your software keeps coming up with updates, and support is a very big profit center. If your software normally sold for $200 or $500 or $1,000, you could offer it on a marketing test basis for a nominal amount, $20, $50, whatever you wanted, with the rationale that anybody can ask you to spend $1,000. We ask you basically to spend this and run a tandem with your other one, for 3 months or 6 months. Give them a test application period so they know they have a criteria of what they're trying to do. And during this time, tell them what they should expect the outcome to be on a superior performance, depending on what the software is designed to do. Tell them at the end of that period, unless they've seen superior results that have made the given them more, whatever it is, productivity, control, access, whatever, then you don't expect them to keep it even at that nominal price, and you return their money. If they do see that, that performance, keep the software, enjoy it, and when updates come, you let them buy it for the same rate everybody else does, and if they want the support, they can have that too. The support and the updates will be your profit center. You'll get lots of people to come in with a lowered barrier of entry. One of the key elements of selling, Marty, that most business owners don't recognize is you lower the barrier of entry, you increase the response rate for customers. People are impeded because you make it too hard for them to get started. You put up too many hurdles. They have to take a lot more risk, a lot more chances. They have to suffer a lot of the implications. If you take away the risk, you lower the financial barrier of entry. You tell them you don't have to abandon what you're doing. Run this tandem or try this only for a few period of time. Put it through the following test. Compare it against yours. You tell them the kind of performance test to put the product or service through. Then you tell them what will happen if it works, and how if it doesn't work, they're out nothing. You'll give them their money back. It's a very powerful approach.
What's an inexpensive way to find people to try that with?
You can try anything that has any kind of exciting merit in a small little controlled test before you ever have to abandon your mainstay marketing method or selling method. And you can always take a small quantity of a target audience. Let's say in that field, that depends on the software, it probably has a specific market it applies to. You would identify people in that market. You may rent 1,000 or 2,000 companies or individuals, or you may buy a regional ad in a publication and try the offer one time to them. You may even call up on the phone and just test it with a bunch of people telephoning, saying, my name is Jay Abraham. I'm the president of ABC Software Company. You might know our software sells for $4,000. Some of the biggest companies in the country have it, but a lot of companies who could use it more significantly than even they do, like yourself, don't have it, and we think it's because the barrier of entry is too high. We've come up with a way you can test it at our risk, and I'd like to tell you about it. You can try telephone marketing to 500, 350 people, mailing 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people or companies, running a little test ad, then doing nothing and seeing what the response is. If the response is profound, don't do anything yet. See how many people keep the product and how many people progress to the next level, because the next level is where you make your real profit, either the upgrades or the higher or the new versions or the add-ons or the support. And I'm just using it for software. You can apply it to health clubs. You can apply it to almost any kind of area you want.
Okay, how about this highlighted statement? You helped some cash-strapped client in Pittsburgh earn over $150,000 in 3 months.
I that's right, I did. It was a real estate a training company, and he was out of money, but he didn't realize that his really greatest asset was the relationship and the goodwill he had with his customers. When he ran out of money, we helped him figure out that he had so much trust for them that all he had to do was introduce to them other people who had other money-making and cost-saving and time-saving ways these real estate agents could improve their performance, and introduce those people's ways to his old customers who trusted him. And they responded in droves, and he was able to organize training programs and selling and material to his old, inactive, seemingly tired customers, and he brought in a quick $150,000 just like almost overnight.
Okay. Explain a little more. How did that work? How could it work?
Well, it's inherent. It's based on a very simple understanding. Most of us don't realize that the greatest asset we have in our businesses, if we conduct our businesses honorably and equitably and ethically, is the goodwill and the trust we have garnered and we have built and we have accrued with our customers. That goodwill lends itself to all kinds of different things. When you are in trouble, or when you have saturated to a market the capacity they have to buy whatever your mainstay product or service is, that doesn't mean your sales opportunities end. They only begin because you have the trust. All you have to do is identify what I'll call the cycle of life. And by the cycle of life, Marty, that refers to the scope of products or services that would complement, that the people would be interested in, that would help them or protect them or enhance their life or their business performance, before, during, after they would use whatever product or service you offered them. And when you realize what the scope of those products or services are, your goal is then to identify other companies who perform, produce, create, sell, distribute those products or services, and make arrangements with them to offer those products or services directly to your market, retaining the maximum amount of profit you can negotiate because you're producing access to that for those companies of customers they never would have. It's a real simple, simple, simple process. I've probably produced, I don't know, $500 million all told over the years around the world by helping companies realize their greatest stored asset is the relationship they have with their customer. And when they're in trouble, the trick is to find other products or services that are complementary, that are kindred, that are non-competitive, but that add to or follow up or dimensionalize whatever the result is they're getting from the product or service your company sells, and bring that to them also. People will respond in droves because they trust you.
This strategy might be good for a lawyer.
A lawyer could bring other financial products or services to his clients through a division he set up. It'd be good for a CPA. They could do consulting services of all kinds as a profit center through their business. It's good for almost everybody. We've had software companies get management consultants as their back end. When they've sold somebody software and there's nothing else to sell, they'll bring management consulting and all kinds of other consulting, and they'll bring other kinds of software that complement theirs, and they'll make more money introducing those other products or services they do on their mainstay business. It requires a very expansive and a very enlightened attitude, Marty, where you realize that your job is to bring as much value to your customers or clients as you can, and it's not just to sell them your product or service. It's to basically sell them your product or service and in the process gain their trust, understand their needs, and bring them protection and bring them improvement and bring them enhancement in the quality and the prosperity and the profitability and the protection of their life through whatever means you are able to identify, access, and distribute to them. It's a real interesting attitude, but it's made people millions of dollars.
Okay, now the wizard's answer, how do you know that you're not going too far afield from your main calling?
Your main calling should not be that you are a distributor of this or you are a retailer of that or you are a professional doing that. Your main calling should be that I am in business to do two things: to bring the greatest level of advantage to my customer or client, A, and in the process to render myself financially better off. That's a pretty broad spectrum. If you got the open-mindedness to say that I may be, my basic product or service may only be a means to get people introduced to me, I may make more money for myself and do a greater service for them by bringing them other people's products or services, it opens up a broader spectrum and increases by a magnitude of 10 or 100 times the possibilities you have available. See, I think people have to look at being in business as a function of finding the optimum way to reap the greatest benefit for others, I mean, to render the greatest benefit and reap the greatest rewards in the process ethically. That's a very abstract statement and opens up vast possibilities of applications to people.
So a person actually is just adjusting his thinking style to what the wizard would advise, and in fact may discover a whole new area to profit in.
There are no boundaries except legality in my mindset, Marty. I look at possibilities everywhere. I don't look at why this won't work. I look at what we have to do to make this work for our situation, for our customers. And I broaden, I knock down all the barriers philosophically. I change the rules of the game I and my clients play, and it makes life much more exciting, much more expansive, much more possibility-focused, and much more non-competitive because virtually nobody else looks at life that way. We look at life, people that I work with, as if the whole world is a 3D movie and we have the only pair of glasses.
All right, tell me about this idea you did for a Chicago man. He built a startup business to over $300,000 in just the first year.
Sure, it's easy. I'm a great believer in making people realize the expertise they possess in their job, in their business, in their enterprise. People don't realize that every enterprise has amongst it hundreds or thousands of sub-processes. Everything you do in your business is a process. The way you manage your business, the way you handle your buying, the way you sell it, the way you deal with the customer, the way you close sales, the way you run your ads, the things you do, the way that you organize it, the way you manufacture, produce, or coordinate. All those facets are processes that can be, first of all, identified, segregated, codified, and replicated by other people. I try to get clients that I work with to go within their business and identify all the different aspects of their business that other people don't do as well as they do, and that if people could learn how to do those processes more successfully, it would add enormous advantage to their business success. And it ranges from all kinds of things. One time we had a car wash that I worked with, and the car wash had developed quite accidentally a process that got three times as many people to take the hot wax option as a normal car wash. And that little process added something like an extra $20,000 a month to the bottom line of the car wash. And when I started working trying to grow the car wash, I said, you don't realize that your greatest asset isn't how much growth you've got in your car wash. It's how much growth you've got by taking that process you have developed and sharing it with all kinds of other car washes outside of your marketing area. And I persuaded them to sell and rent and lease and license the techniques after they codified it and turned it into a structured methodology or formula. The process they used to get customers to buy on average three times more hot waxes than the norm, and I got them to rent that technique or that technology to 1,000 other car washes around the country who paid him a monthly rental to use it, and they made more money renting that concept out than they did running their car wash. Now, I also did it with another gentleman, and a gentleman named George Culp made, so far he's made $968,000 on the side by recognizing a process he has in his business that no one else understood. He is in a lumber mill. He buys trees, logs, he cuts them, he forms them into planks and boards, he then dries the boards into lumber, he sends the boards to builders and to building supply places all over his community. What he didn't know and I didn't know when I first met him was that he is absolutely the most expert entity in the world at a concept called kiln drying. Kiln drying is what happens after you cut a piece of timber into board feet. You then put it into a heated chamber called a kiln, K-I-L-N. That kiln methodically and very strategically dries the moisture out of the wood. And depending upon the effectiveness and the efficiency of it, the wood turns out many different ways. It can be grade AAA, it can be grade C. If you kiln dry incorrectly, you have a lot of wastage and you have a lot of warpage and you have a lot of low grade. If you kiln dry correctly, you have a high grade and you have very little wastage and very, very low waste of utilities and energy. This client of mine had a process he developed which produced the highest possible quantity of AA and A board feet. It produces the lowest recorded level of wastage and used the least amount of time and energy. It saved his lumber mill something like $2 million a year. He was trying to grow his lumber mill sales, and I said, why do that? It's much easier to go to all the other lumber mills outside of your competition area. And by the way, his competition area was only 300 miles because lumber has so much weight that even if he gave you the lumber free, it wouldn't be cost-effective for you to take it over about 300 miles delivery because of the weight and the transportation costs. So almost no one was a competitor. And I got him to teach all the other lumber mills around the country and around the world his kiln-drying processes. He started off charging only $1,500 to do it, and that was too little because they were reporting savings and improvements in the hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars. He raised it to $5,000, then he finally raised it to $25,000. Now, once every 6 months, he has a kiln-drying school at his facilities where people pay him $25,000 to come, and all the big lumber companies and the small ones come. Now, answering your question, Marty, I had a dry cleaner. The dry cleaner was an absolutely brilliant little promoter. He had six facilities in and around Chicago. He ran great ads. He did great in-store promotions. He did great letters to his customers. He had enormously effective presentations he had all his staff do at the point of purchase. He produced on a revenue per customer basis something like 60 or 80% more revenue and corresponding profit per customer than the industry norm. We got him to basically take his techniques, turn it into not a newsletter, but a monthly service that other dry cleaners paid $50 a month to receive, and he taught them his techniques every month in written more correspondence and examples. And the first when he first did it right away, he made $360,000 or $380,000, whatever it was, $331,760 exactly. But by the time the first year was over, it was a $1 million business. Does that help answer it?
It certainly is a good start. Tell me how to find these things. For example.
Well, the first thing you have to do is value what you do. You got to look within your enterprise at all aspects. I deal most with money making, but that's not the scope. You got to think of things you do more effectively, more efficiently, more productively, more ease of control basis than other people in your industry or in related industries or things you do that have enormous universal appeal. It could be the fact that you can hire people and get a higher level of quality people than other people. It could be that you've got a way to get more productivity per hour or per person or more utility in a manufacturing process. It could be that you've got an advertising approach that gets far greater yield from far greater waste. It could be that your selling approach is powerful, your telephone approach or your service approach. It could be that your business has far less broken transactions or refunds, and the ones you have you turn into sales. It could be that you have an average unit of sale that's three times higher than your industry. It could be that you have a mechanical or technical process that is better. It could be that you've developed a delivery process. I met a guy one time who modeled Federal Expresses, and he developed overnight delivery in the trucking business, which was unknown because he took their technique and modified it and implemented it in his business. It could be any kind of process that would help any other business or a specific kind of business or generic business type improve their either performance, their efficiency, their productivity, their sales, their profits. It doesn't matter. Once you identify what it is, then you've got to measure and value what the implications would be to somebody else's business. In other words, if you've got a process that produces twice the yield for one half the effort, time, and expense, you've got to quantify it and measure and denominate what the implication of that is to somebody's business. For example, if you know that the car wash had added $20,000 worth of profit every month over and above what the average car wash did, if you say to somebody, for $100 or $1,000 a month rental fee, I'll license you a process that worst case should add $250,000 a year to your business. Anytime you want to stop using it, stop paying me the usage fee. As long as you want to keep using it, pay me $1,000 or pay me $100, whatever you want to get. It's a very powerful process, don't you think, Murray?
Yes, I do. Now, can you tell me about the delivery? How do you deliver it?
Yeah. There's a number of ways to do it. You can do it in a monthly written form. You can do it in a turnkey package. They can come to you. You can go to them. You can do it on tape. You can do it video. You can do it in group conference calls. You can do it any combination thereof. The trick to all this is realizing that there are no rules that bind you, only your sense of possibility, Marty.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of people could profit from that.
Well, a lot of people have. There's almost no one that I meet that doesn't do at least one thing within their business or their job better. I've even had employees help them realize that they perform certain functions in their job two or three times better than everyone else they worked alongside, get them to go to their employer, get their employer to pay them extra to identify and codify why it is and what it is they did, teach that to other employees, give their employer to give them a bonus for every employee they taught it to who improved their performance, then get their employer to put money up to create a profit center where these people then taught those techniques outside to other businesses on a profit center-based subsidiary. So it means limitless.
All right. I've been waiting to ask you this question. In the last week, what are some of the ideas that came across your mind that you weren't able to share with anyone?
Oh, wow. This is an interesting week you're asking. I just came back from Australia where I did three-day training programs. When I came back to the States, I did another one. I've done 4 3-day programs with a total of about 1,000 people who have interacted with me. So, I mean, my mind is awash with ideas and possibilities. Probably the biggest idea that has hit me that I haven't yet had the opportunity to put into any action for anyone is basically recognizing how much more people respond to you when they see you as a friend instead of as a customer, and how much easier it is to build friendships than it is to try to sell people things. I did a series of training programs, and that was almost the entire focus for 36 hours at one program I did in Australia, was how few people realize that the opportunity and the treasure payoff in life emanates from how many people you can enrich, and enrichment is a function of building friendships for. And I basically haven't had a chance to really take that to a training process, but I've had a chance to impact a lot of people with that, Marty. You might ask me that question a little later in this conversation because my mind is so awash with. Sometimes I have so many ideas that it's overwhelming.
Okay.
why don't we go through? I mean, I think you'd be doing me and you and the listener an even greater service if we went through just some of the other examples in this, and I took some of the ideas we've used just to get them up to par. Because I think we're going to have so many new ideas over the year that if I just started them with a basis of sharing a dozen or two proven ideas, it'd be pretty nice.
Okay, you mentioned Australia there. You had a brainstorm with an Australian friend that built him a $10 million business in under 3 years.
Yeah, that's true. It's pretty simple. I have a friend that was in the training business, but it applies to everybody. He had approximately 20,000 customers who he'd worked very hard selling his $200 training courses, seminars, and tapes to, and he was hitting a wall. He had about 7 products. He'd sold all 7 or as many of them as people would want to buy to his existing customer bases, and he thought his only chance of growth emanated from going outside and building new customers. Now, I'll give you a little quick summary. I don't know if it was in the material we sent to listeners and subscribers or not, but there are only 3 ways to grow any enterprise. It doesn't matter what business you are in, what profession you are in, what business you're contemplating starting. There are 3 ways and only 3 ways, Marty, to grow any business. Way number 1 is you increase the number of customers. That's the conventional way. Way number 2, which makes it much easier than increasing customers, is increasing the unit of sale of every transaction your current customers do with you. Way number 3 is increasing the frequency, the number of repeat transactions people do with you, whether they be for your own products or services or other products or services you're able to offer them. Come back to my story. Here was this company. They had 20,000 customers, but they had hit a wall. Those customers pretty well were saturated on buying the products and services that this company had sold. The people loved the company, their products and services were great, but that's all they had, and the company had no other products or services to offer. They thought their only salvation was to go outside and work very arduous and hard to build new customers. I suggested that that was probably the least effective, least efficient, least cost-efficient, least productive alternative they had. A better way might be to find other, more valuable products and services to sell. We identified that most of their customers were businesses who wanted to grow their sales, improve their management, improve their customer loyalty and satisfaction and service, improve their rapport with their employees and staff. And I found for them 5 different experts who were from the United States who were expert above and beyond the level this company was at doing that. I got the company that I was working with to go to these people and work arrangements where they paid them very impressive but very nominal based on the results, fees to come over and teach their techniques live to people, but record them, turn them into other products and services they could sell, and start a whole new division of reselling new products and services, which were expansions on the basic reason that the customers had originally sought out my client. And they sold $10 million worth of additional products, what I'll call on the back end, to existing customers. It's a formula we use all the time, but the profit on the back end is about 8 or 10 times higher than the profit on the front end. When you have to go out and buy a new customer, the cost of sales is atrocious. It's acute. You got to spend the marketing cost, the advertising cost, the selling cost. Once you have an existing customer who's already transacted business with you, Marty, you have goodwill, you have respect, you have identity of who they are. The cost of reselling them once you have their trust is a phone call or a visit or a letter. It costs you pennies or dollars, not hundreds of dollars as it does to get a new customer the first time.
Can you imagine for us someone listening who could apply this directly after they...
I can't imagine anyone listening who couldn't apply it directly, Marty. All you have to do is ask yourself this question. Do I have goodwill with my customers? Did they come to me for a reason? Did I fulfill in that reason with trust and with dependability and integrity? If the answer is yes, you have goodwill, you have authority, you have affinity, you have their trust. All you have to do is then make a comprehensive list of all the other products or services that are offshoots of the main theme that are more dimensional and more specific assets that would help those people get a greater outcome from whatever it is they came to you originally for. Put those together and then offer them to them. Offer them to them directly if you're a retailer through your business. Offer them to them by a letter. Offer them to them in person. Offer them to them over the phone. Offer them to them in all different ways and test and experiment. You don't have to summarily turn your whole business into another product. You can try all kinds of different possibilities in low risk, very, very small controlled test environments first to see which one or ones will produce the greatest yield, and those are the ones that you do the most with, and you expand upon them. It's real easy, Marty.
You use the word dimensionalizing. That seems to be a focus of your thoughts.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, it means this, that most people are too hip and too assumptive. They think everyone understands the implications to everything, and they do not. The more people appreciate, understand the dimensions of something, the more loyal they are, the more empowered they are, the more responsive they are. So your job is to dimensionalize everything. If you're selling a product or service, you've got to not sell the product or service. You've got to sell the result the product or service produces. You've got to take people on journeys to see how much better off they're going to be, what the picture is going to be like when they're using that product or service. Take them on all kinds of different adventures into the experiencing how much richer or more protected or easier their life will be. If a product or service is a commodity, you've got to make your product unique, and that's by dimensionalizing it. Tell them all the things that go into your being able to render it to them, the construction components, the time that goes into it, the quality. Let me give you an example. It might be in the material I sent, but I'll use it anyhow. Years and years and years ago, Schlitz beer went from number 9 in their market to number 1 in their market because one gentleman understood dimensionalization, and he used it in the context of called preemptive marketing. Everybody at the time was selling beer and saying, our beer is pure. Pure was the phrase every beer company was using to affix to their beer, and so no beer basically had any distinction. The man who helped Schlitz was a brilliant marketer that I patterned a lot of my life after. His name was Claude Hopkins. What Claude Hopkins did was he went to visit the Schlitz Brewing Factory, and he wanted to look at all the composition and the construction components that could make the way they did something unique in the eyes of the customer. First thing he did is landed on the shores of Lake Michigan, where Schlitz had their brewery in Milwaukee. He was fascinated that right off the shore, now this is back before all the Great Lakes were putrefied, and the water there was quite good, but he was fascinated that even though they were right on the shores of the lake, and there was an infinite amount of water, the people that ran the Schlitz Brewery had drilled 2 artesian wells 5 or 6,000 feet down right off the shores to get a higher mineral content, a higher degree of purity in water. And he was fascinated. He asked them why they did that. And they said because the water in the lake wasn't of the right consistency to brew the kind of beer that they wanted. He walked inside and he saw, first of all, this incredible plant that was sterilized and mechanized and compartmentalized. And the first thing they showed him to see, Marty, was the yeast room where they had the mother yeast cell from which every other yeast they used to produce their beer was a byproduct. And they explained how the mother yeast cell came to be. The Schlitz people tried 1,658 different experiments, combining different components of yeast, some little sharper, some a little more bitter, some a little more sweet, to find the embodiment, the perfect combination that produced the absolute perfect taste, perfect heartiness, perfect whiteness, perfect sweetness, non-bitterness that made the mother yeast cell what it was. He then saw the brewing room, and the brewing room started with distilled water. They took water and they heated it to some incredible amount, and the water vaporized and then came back and solidified, and they did it 3 times to make...
Jay, hold that story. We need to hear more on Side 2.
All right, Jay Abraham, continue talking about how Schlitz moved from what, number 9 to number 1?
Yeah, it's very simple, and I'm almost done. But basically, the man walked through the whole brewing process. He finally saw how the bottles were done, and the bottles were done where they were heated and steamed 2 or 3 times, and before they were filled by steam that was 1,600 degrees Fahrenheit that killed every bacteria. And finally, they had tasters who tasted 1 out of every 100 bottles and rejected about 1 out of every 4 batches. And when the man was done touring the whole facility, he looked at the owners and he said, "This is incredible. I had no idea that you made beer this way." And they said, "But everyone makes beer this way." And the man said, "But the marketplace doesn't know that. The first company who goes to the effort and trouble of explaining how a product is produced, how it's constructed, will get distinction, will get preemptive advantage." And I was explaining, Marty, that as an example of dimensionalizing. The more you dimensionalize how the product is created, what goes into it, the training, the preparation, the capital, the equipment you've got, and then you dimensionalize what the product does for people and what the people's lives in business or in regular lives, what their lives will be like as they apply it and experience it and utilize it from a result-based standpoint, the more you are going to impact them and compel them to action. People don't really buy products, they buy results. Most companies today have become complacent, apathetic. They are too hip. they assume everybody understands the implication of everything, and they do not. The one company who understands what I have just said and embraces that into what they do is going to have distinction in their industry. Anyone listening to this who is in business for themselves or running a business or contemplating a business, this one distinction alone can give you superior advantage over everybody else you'll ever compete against.
Okay, Jay, your ideas are so elegant that it seems like it takes especially good concentration to go ahead and understand them deeply enough to apply them. Talk about that just a little more. Give us a real practical example. Pretend I'm really dumb.
Well, I mean, to understand this, let me start with a declaration. Most people in business are trying to buy a business or start a business or run a profession or run a business for anyone else. Make the process of selling people, the process of making money, the process of reselling people, and the process of making substantial process about 10 times harder than it has to be. It's really simple. All you got to do is understand a few quick things. Number one, your goal in life has to be to get the highest and the best use of every opportunity you have. It's got to be the highest and best use of your time, the highest and best use of your opportunities, the highest, best, and best use of your capital, the highest and best use of your customers, the highest and best use of your facility, the highest and best use of your equipment, the highest and best use of your people, the highest and best use of your distribution channels, the highest and best use of your goodwill and the affinity you have established and you will be establishing with customers and prospects. Number two, you've got to use a derivative of that is the theory of optimization. Why do something that produces a fraction of the yield if you can do something that produces many times more of a yield? So your goal has got to be to maximize everything you do. You can't maximize until you first understand the spectrum of opportunities and options available. Most people spend their entire life, Marty, immersed in one field of endeavor, and they've been in that field for a long time, and all they know, plus or minus about 10%, is how everyone else in their industry operates. I'm talking about from a marketing standpoint, but I probably also talking from an operational or management standpoint. Just because everyone else in your industry operates the same way does not mean it is the most effective, the most efficient, the most optimal, the most enjoyable way. You've got to step outside and look at easier, more powerful alternatives that other people may have discovered outside of your field of endeavor. I think that a good analogy is that most people who have ever traveled outside of the country have had their mind broadened. If you travel outside of your industry or your business, you will have your mindset broadened. The key to this whole strategy is one of changing your mindset. Most people don't have the right mindset. They have impossibility-based instead of possibility-based. You got to change the way you do something or you will never, ever, ever get a different outcome. And the best way to do something is change your mindset. Your mindset has got to be the focus upon which you drive all your activities. My recommendation to the people listening to this is to realize that other people have already discovered and perfected far more powerful, far easier, far more productive and profitable ways of doing things than you probably do them in your own business. There is no reason you have to be in a vacuum and recreate the wheel yourself. It's much easier, it's much safer, it's much more profitable, it's much more expedient, it requires much less energy to borrow proven, successful, and profit-certain processes from outside your field and apply them to your business because they have the highest possibility possible of getting you increased results. They have the lowest possibility of costing you more money and the highest probability of reducing the time and effort. That should be your philosophy. Understand this, Marty. There are easier ways to do things. The most powerful processes in the world, if you study the greatest, wealthiest people and you really analyze them, you'll see that most of them really do very simple things over and over. They've reduced the whole process of money-making or wealth creation to a simple process. The clearer your understanding, the simpler and the more reduced your awareness of what makes something work, the more powerful it normally becomes. I deal in seemingly elegantly simple, almost disarmingly obvious solutions because I've had the good fortune of studying thousands and tens of thousands of very successful people. I've had the good fortune of comparatively analyzing and researching and dissecting and evaluating and examining hundreds of thousands of different philosophies and strategies and success techniques, and finding the core essences that were existing in almost all of them, and reducing it down to its base simplicity. I'm basically the torque converter for all the people listening on this service. My goal is to give you in 3 minutes what's taken certain people a lifetime and took me perhaps a year to understand and refine down. But that doesn't mean it's complex. Sometimes you try to intellectualize things too much. All I'm saying is what I'm going to share on all of these taped visits with people are the distillation, the condensation, the absolute summarization of the most powerful but simplified success techniques I have ever discovered, and they are techniques that have already proven their negotiable worth every place they've been applied.
It seems like one concept that you have mentioned very clearly is for people to think about their customers rather than the product they happen to be selling their customers.
Most people fall in love with their product or their company instead of falling in love with their customers. Until you can fall in love with your customers and you can redirect your purpose, one of the key elements to getting greater results out of your life and your job and your business and your opportunities is changing what I'll call your causal purpose. The world doesn't care about what is in it for you. The world doesn't care why you're doing something. The world doesn't care if you want to be wealthy. All the world cares about is how much more you can advantage them, how much more benefit you can give to them, how much greater the result or the advantage or the payoff they're going to get from dealing with you instead of dealing with somebody else. The more you understand and you focus your efforts on that outcome, the more successful you will be. So I try to get all of my direct consulting clients to change their causal purpose and fall in love with their customers and prospects instead of their products and processes, and make everything they do a commitment to make their customers better off for having dealt with them, protect, advise, take their customers to greater utility. And when you look at it that way, it changes the whole focus you have on the way you sell. You realize that you only do things that are in your customer's best interest, but in your customer's best interest is probably buying more of your product more often, because it's going to enhance and enrich the quality of their life. It's going to make the customer get a better payoff if they use more of your product and use more of it. But that will never happen until you first revere and respect what the implications of your product or service are to somebody's life. And I don't mean that it's a generic widget or gadget, but what happens when they put that widget or gadget into use in their life, how much is affected, the change, the protection, the quality, the profitability that happens. You've got to be able to look at the implication in their life transactionally and result-wise of what happens when a customer uses your product or service before you can appreciate it.
Let me ask you about this sample that you mentioned in the mailing. You created a headline test in 20 minutes and eventually brought in a couple $100,000.
More than that. I brought in $300,000 extra for myself. I got paid $300,000 for that 20 minutes.
Okay. You have my attention.
What did I do?
Yeah.
What I did was I recognized one of the most powerful opportunities and realities about any kind of a selling situation or any aspect of life, and it's a scientific recognition. Different ways of doing things produce different outcomes. There is leverage in doing things more intelligently, and the leverage translates to all kinds of things. I can take it in the mundanest way. There are certain ways of distributing products that are more effective and cost-effective and expedient than others. In communicating with people for purposes of selling, different ways you do or say something produce different outcomes, more or less yield, more or less results, more or less purchase size. Most people don't realize that the greatest opportunity you have in doing business is the ability to test. Because if you test different assumptions or different factors or different variables in your selling process, you will find that different ways of doing or saying or presenting things will produce massively different approaches. For example, headline, which is what the secret to this is. In any selling situation, Marty, the headline is 80 or 90% of the key aspect of whether something is successful or not, or whether it's massively successful, obscenely successful, or unsuccessful. The headline is the ad for the ad. It's the opening statement that is uttered or published in any selling situation. The headline is a very universally applicable concept. In its literal sense, in an ad, the headline is the cluster of words preceding the body copy. It's the statement that denominates and presents the biggest possible self-serving result the reader or listener or viewer could get from availing himself or herself of your product or service's benefit or result. The headline is, in a sales letter, the first paragraph that is uttered. In a sales presentation, the headline is the first cluster of paragraphs that a salesperson states when he or she engages somebody in person, on the phone, at your facility. Anyhow, back to the ranch. I had a client. The client was involved in the precious metals business. They sold gold and silver for investment purposes to customers and clients the world over, and they did it with an arrangement with a financial institution, a bank, if you will, that financed the purchases. The bank would finance two-thirds of the purchase on a leveraged arrangement. My client ran ads in the Wall Street Journal. The ads were very simple. They had headlines that said, two-thirds bank financing on silver and gold. When my client ran those ads, they were very successful. The ads produced enough revenue that the client, A, was able to pay the salespeople good commissions, B, paid themselves salaries, pay their overhead, and have money left to reinvest in future ads. When I looked at it, I thought that their headline was not telegraphing the most powerful and compelling self-serving advantage that was in it for the customer, for the intended investor. I thought that their headline, two-thirds bank financing on silver and gold, put too much onus on the customer to have to figure out what the real true self-serving benefit was to that customer. I asked them for the chance to change the headline and test that headline against the one they were running. My standard form of compensation back in those days was I got 25% of the increased profit if I improved the performance of a given area. I got 50% of the increased profit if I added a new dimension or a new profit center. I tried two headlines. One improved at 20%, one improved at 500%. I will only tell you the headline that I came up with that improved at 500%. Remember, the old ad said, with a headline, two-thirds bank financing on silver and gold. This is when silver was selling for $6, gold was about $300 an ounce. I changed the headline to read as follows. If gold is selling for $300 an ounce, send us just $100 an ounce and we'll buy you all the gold you want. Add a different version for silver. If silver is selling for $6 an ounce, send us just $2 an ounce and we'll buy you all the silver you want. The essence of my headline was it denominated the self-serving advantage in a first-hand case study way that anybody could instantly see what's in it for them. What's in it for them is all they have to come up with is $100 and they can buy $300 gold. That's much more powerful a denomination. By changing that headline alone, the ad started producing five times greater yield from every insertion they did in the Wall Street Journal. They were spending about $5,000, and it was producing $50,000 in sales. After I changed the headline, every time they spent $5,000, they started producing $250,000 in sales, and that doesn't take in consideration the repeat purchases. I got paid 25% of the increased profit and collected about $30,000 a month for about 10 months for that 20-minute change in headline. Headlines apply to everybody, Marty, in their written communication, in their oral communication, in their telephone communication, in their electronic communication. Headlines are the ad for the ad. They have to telegraph the biggest and the most compelling self-serving advantage somebody has in store for them and somebody can expect to derive from availing themselves of the rest of your proposition or availing themselves of your product or service. If you don't do that, you're lessening massively the amount of outcome you could be producing for your company and for your treasury.
What industry, what area of business probably is the has the very greatest opportunity for improving
I mean, frankly, that's not the right question. What industry doesn't? I mean, there's no industry that we've applied the techniques and the principles and the ideas and the philosophies and the strategies I'm all about to that hasn't seen massive improvement when they applied it correctly. Most people allow themselves a far less outcome because no one's ever told them the meaning of business life. They don't understand certain key elements. They don't understand that people are silently begging to be led. They don't understand that people only care about their own self-interest. They don't understand that people don't take action because they're afraid of making mistakes. And if you can take away the risk, it's very powerful. Going back to testing, because testing is not just applicable to headlines, testing applies to all kinds of things. You can test different offers and find that one expression or articulation of an offer will outproduce another by 10, 20, 50, 100, 200%. You can test different risk reversals or guarantees and eliminate, Marty, risk on the side of the customer by such a big margin that it opens up massive, massive inducement for lots more people taking advantage in doing business with you. You can price things differently. And by pricing, little changes in prices, we've seen one time a $19 price outproduced a $17 price by 400%. Conversely, we tested a $69 price against a $79 price, and the $69 outproduced $79 by 300%. Until you know what avenues, what options, what approaches produce the best yield for your individual situations, and people must understand everyone's situation is unique. It's kaleidoscopically unique. There's different factors that prevail that mean you've got to try different assumptions. But once you do that, you can find alternatives and recombinations that will give you enormous advantage, enormous improvement on everything you do.
Okay. Talk about this insurance company. They went from annual sales from $12 million to $40 million in under a year. Mm-hmm. Your advice in that situation?
My advice was stop doing what you're doing and take advantage of the effort somebody else made. I have a very simple philosophy. I'm fundamentally lazy. I don't like to waste time, money, effort, or emotion when I can take advantage of the time, effort, emotion that somebody else has already expended. I've done this many times, but for the insurance company, I said, let's go around the country and see who's already expended enormous amounts of effort, capital, and human capital developing the trust of people who are investment or financially oriented. We found that there were a series of financial newsletters that had been around for a long time, that had hundreds of thousands of subscribers, that had painstakingly spent millions of dollars mailing all kinds of prospective customers to find actual subscribers. They'd spent millions of dollars on their editorial, on their research, on their support staff, producing an incredible newsletter. They gave advice that made people money and protected people's finances and assets. They had enormous respect, enormous trust. We went to those people and said, here are insurance products that have been custom designed for the investment-minded, upper-income, high-net-worth individual. They have greater advantages, greater protections. They are specifically for them. They're not available readily anywhere else. We are the captive hold. We spend most of our time going to the outside market. We'd much rather go to your market with your endorsement, produce educational information and means that your prospects could use to determine and assess value and applicability before they bought, but work on a basis that you made us accessible to your audience. I persuaded these newsletters to let us create 8-page special issue reports that explain the advantage and the impact and the unique results that our products produce for somebody. The results were if they used our products, and back then it was a basically guaranteed investment annuity, what it did was it gave tax-deferred an investor the chance to create at retirement double or triple the lifestyle they would do if they had the same amount of money growing for them in taxable issues. And most people didn't realize they had this available so easily. And by using the goodwill of the newsletter and letting the news allowing and getting the newsletter to allow us to put special reports explaining, summarizing, and illustrating the advantage of our product, along with calls to action and offers to evaluate a various investor situation, we were able to insert in newsletters something like 500,000 reports. The cost to do that was something like $50,000. That $50,000 was something like 1/100 of the expense we were spending to go to the outside market, run ads ourselves, knock on doors, call on people cold, build our credibility. We got something like 50,000 people to ask for our report, and we sold something like 10,000 of them on insurance program, and we did something like $60 million when, in fact, the previous year we'd done they had done $12 million doing conventionally with salesmen in the field and all kinds of non-efficient time and capital dissipating alternatives. So the trick is, if somebody has already expended years and hundreds or millions, hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars building goodwill, establishing their trust, having affinity, gaining the respect of a customer base, if you can get them to let you basically piggyback on the coattails of that respect, if they will introduce you through their direct channel of communication and distribution to their customers, you can get an enormous, enormous response for very little effort, cost, or time, and that's what we did.
Any advice on looking for something like that?
Yeah, it's simple. There's a process. Again, the same concept of the cycle of life. Ask yourself, who already has a very tightly bonded, highly respected relationship with the exact customer you want to sell? What else are those customers buying right now, and who are they buying it from, and who is in a position that they already have the goodwill, they already have the respect, they already have the customer, and you are in a position that they could introduce your products or services with their endorsement easily to their customers through either their salespeople, through space or a display in their retail store, through a letter to their people, through a special offer, through special visits you did along with their salespeople, through any combination thereof. The greatest lever you've got. Anybody can do it. It works everywhere it's ever applied, as long as you believe it'll work, Marty.
All right. I was going to say, I would guess that most people probably would be responsive to an offer like that.
They absolutely are. Most people that trust somebody else trust when they make a recommendation, as long as it's evident it's not self-serving. And because most of the people you approach to do what I call host beneficiary, to be a host for you, to let you have the benefit of accessing the enormous cumulative assets, investment, and time and effort they have already put in the goodwill, they have never breached that. Their integrity is intact. The trust level they enjoy with their customer is profound. When you access it, the payoff you'll get is so out of proportion to the time and the effort you'll expend, it's unbelievable.
Talk about this company that G.D. Searle bought, and you pulled them in 18 months from $20,000 in sales to $13
million. Mm-hmm. It was based on two really interesting ideas. Idea one was don't pay for advertising, pay for results. Idea two was understanding the back end and the marginal net worth or the lifetime value of a company, of a customer. We were in a business of selling an analgesic balm like Bengay or Mentholatum. It was called Icy Hot, I-C-Y-H-O-T. Icy Hot was a glob of gelatinous goop that you rubbed on your joints and your back and your knees, and it actually improved and relieved the pain, the anguish, the discomfort of arthritis, bursitis, and rheumatism. Icy Hot sold for $3. It cost us about 45 cents to produce it and ship out. It was basically very low-cost chemicals, but a very high-quality product. Most of the old business had run ads in magazines trying to sell it, and some worked, some didn't. We analyzed and determined that every time we got a customer, the odds were every time we got two customers, one would be with us for life or until somebody came up for a cure for arthritis, and the average person would buy something like two or three jars six times a year. So they'd buy about 12 more jars every time they bought one. And those 12 jars would be at $3 a piece, so it would be basically 12 times 3, or $36 worth of business would result every time somebody bought the first jar on average, or every time two people bought the first jar, $36 more a year would result. That made for us profit of approximately $30. So we realized that what's called the marginal net worth or the lifetime profit value of a new customer was profound. And we could afford to spend quite a bit to get a new customer because every time we got two, we accrued one of those forever for $36 a year. So what we did was we stopped spending money on advertising, which was uncontrolled, and we instead said, let's pay only for results. Let's pay. If we sold it for $3. We went to all the radio stations, the publications, the selling organizations, magazines, catalog companies, everybody, and said, if you'll sell our product for $3, we'll let you keep 100% of the $3 and we'll actually give you an extra 15%. We'll give you $3.45 on every new customer we buy from you. And that shocked people because no one had ever done that. We basically lost approximately 90 cents to produce a $3 sale. However, every time we lost $1.80, we accrued $36. Do you understand that?
Yes.
And that $36 kept coming back year after year after year. So by taking that, we were very aggressive because the loss was not even a real loss, because a lot of times on the first reorder, people would buy $50 or $60. So all we had to do was finance the first purchase. And we basically built a company rapidly. We ended up with 500,000 customers in 18 months. And we accidentally had so much free advertising that we weren't paying for. We were paying only for the results, that we accidentally forced retail sales. We didn't even expect to be retail, but we had, like in 1 year, we had $18 million worth of free advertising we didn't pay a cent for. We only paid for the sales that came from it. And that $18 million, excuse me, of free advertising generated so much retail demand that all the drug chains and all the grocery chains demanded that we let them sell the product also. And we forced it into retail accidentally. It got such distribution that it went from being a mail-order product to a retail product predominantly, and G.D. Searle, the Chicago pharmaceutical company, bought it from us for a very, very high eight-figure purchase.
Wow. All right. We have less than 20 minutes left, and I'm wondering if the listeners want to be guided in, in how to brainstorm between now and the next time, maybe some specific things to think about, maybe your philosophy. What do you think would be most profitable for them, Jeff?
Well, I think a lot of things that I could do would stem from a couple of realizations. First of all, my philosophy. My philosophy is pretty much this. Most people in life build whatever success they achieve on what I'll call a diving board model. If you can visualize a diving board in your mind, Marty, a diving board is a long plank being rested on one platform like a ladder. And if you saw that graphically out and you made the ladder the one method that you built your business, either the one selling method, the one advertising method, the one way you access business, and the diving board being the foundation of your business, it's very scary because the moment that the source of your revenue dries up or somebody else starts doing what you're doing, you lose advantage. I try to get people to build their lives and their businesses more like a Parthenon. If you remember the Parthenon, it's got all those pillars.
Okay.
I like to get people to first and foremost realize all the different ways everybody else has built their business outside of your industry, all the different avenues people are using. Learn what they are, and then find how many different combinations you could bring to bear in your business, because I deal in the philosophy of quantum leaps. Quantum leaps are a function of learning to think exponentially in action and then take exponentiality in words or thoughts, but then take exponentiality to action. Being exponential is a lot different than thinking exponential. Everyone can think, well, I want to be a trillion-dollar company. I want to be huge. But you can't do any of that till you get a clear picture of what you really want out of your life or your business. To get a clear picture, you have to work backwards. You have to know what's possible, and you got to know where you are, and you got to know where you're trying to get to. Most people I see, it's hilarious. They remind me of people trying to get somewhere on a vacation, but they don't know one of two missing ingredients. It's like somebody coming to me and saying, I'm going to San Diego, Marty. How do I get there? And I'll say, well, where are you now? And they don't know. And I say, well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. Go north, south, east, west, over, you know, over the mountains, on the water, or it's a straight path because I don't know where you're starting for. Or they say, I'm in Nebraska, but I don't know where I'm going. How do I get there? And I can't do that. So you got to figure out what is it you're trying to do. And when you figure out what it is, it's got to be very, very clearly defined, Marty. It's got to be a clear picture, not just I want to make $1 million, but if I'm going to make $1 million based on what I'm doing right now, how am I going to get there? Let's say you're in a business and right now you've got 1,000 customers and the average customer generates $50 worth of sales and buys three times a year for you, so you're doing $150,000 worth of sales, right?
Okay.
If you want to be a $1 million company based on that current factor, you got to know how many more transactions and how many more customers doing what you're doing right now do you have to get there. Until you know what is necessary based on your current known factors, you can't really have anywhere close to a chance of achieving them. Once you know that, then you've got wonderful opportunity because you can improve all three of those factors. You can improve the number of customers and the processes you've got to get there. You can improve the programming you've got to get the average unit of sale up. You can improve radically the processes and the mechanisms and the strategies you use to get the customers to buy more of your products or services or more of somebody's products or services through you to add more. But until you really understand the dynamics that currently affect where you are and you factor that into the picture of where you want to be, you have no chance in heaven of ever getting there. It's only going to frustrate you. So that's sort of a little bit of the philosophy I live by. I live by this concept of becoming exponential in thought and action. To demonstrate why that is important, you've got to understand the greatest and the most profound power and force you have readily available that you can commandeer at a moment's notice. It's the force and the magnitude of transcending arithmetic progression and instead going to geometric progression. It's the force that gives you quantum leaps. And I'll give you a great example. Let's say you have a business right now, and that business currently has 1,000 customers. Let's say that business currently sells on average a $100 unit of purchase to those customers. Let's say that the average customer buys 2 times a year from you. That means your business does $200,000, right, Marty?
Right.
1,000 customers buying $100 twice a year, 200,000.